Hey everybody, in this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, we're doing a deep dive on those Golden Age heroes. That's right, we're telling you everything you need to know about the Justice Society of America. I can't wait! Let's do it!
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Such a jaunty little theme every week. There you go. Welcome, everybody.
The Peanuts gang over here just dancing. Right.
To the Comic Book Exchange here on Book Circle Online. That's right. This is the show that breaks down all those graphic periodicals and talks to the creators that bring them to your eyeballs every single Wednesday. I'm your host, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie.
And I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys, your Oracle, so you can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
I am Lex Michael, all over social media at TheLexMichael.
Hi guys, I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
And folks, as always, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Lex lives and dies by those iTunes reviews.
So. I no longer eat, actually. That's right. I sustain myself on 5-star iTunes ratings exactly. And positive commentary.
Oh my God. Also, subscribe to the YouTube channel and hop in the chat. As Lucretia said, she is our oracle. We have the chat up and running, so if you have any thoughts about comic books in general or the Justice Society of America in particular, we're happy to answer them.
Yes, that's right. And thank you.
Yes, please. And thank you. We're very polite here on the Comic Book Exchange. That's right. So this episode is all about the Justice Society of America. Now, those of you that watch TV, the DC Legends of Tomorrow show right there on WB, just introduced the JSA into their series there this past Thursday. So we figured, why not tell audiences a little bit that they need to know about the Justice Society as comic books?
So my first instinct, as always, is to defer to Frank's expertise. But it's interesting. This represents, for me personally, a whole side of the DCU that I was a little bit less familiar with. I remember reading, I think, Frank, we talked about this a little bit after our show last week. I remember reading the really thin trade paperback of Ed Brubaker's The Man Who Laughs, the Batman story, and the backup story in that is a story called Made of Wood, where Batman and Jim Gordon team up with Alan Scott, the original Green Lantern, whose weakness, famously, is wood, of all things.
Yes.
And I remember reading that, and that may have been, if not my introduction, certainly my reintroduction to the idea that, oh, that's right, there are legacy versions of these characters. There are the OGs, if you will.
Well, that's, I feel like the history of the Justice Society of America is the history of DC Comics. I mean, they're there from the beginning. They helped shape what DC Comics became, and they've been a part of almost every pivotal series that they've done throughout the years. Much like we talked about Flash being a part of all those key things, the Justice Society were there before them. They were there just making it all happen. I mean, it started off back in 1941, started by Gardner Fox and Sheldon Mayer. They created the Justice Society, and the idea was like, much like we saw with Marvel would do in the 60s, you take all those popular characters from individual titles, we combine them together, why not give people more bang for their back at that time a dime?
Yeah. This was the first superhero team book as well, was it not? I don't believe there was one that predated this.
This was it, and it was cool. It was still when it was the first intercompany publication as well, because DC Comics as an entity did not exist. It was kind of National Comics and then All-Star Comics. They're kind of separate, each with their different characters. And the idea was like, hey, we're going to combine these characters to try to make one big title. But every time one of the characters would become popular enough to get their own title, they'd be then kind of become an honorary member of the JSA and then taken out and replaced by somebody else.
That was a bit of that was like an unofficial / fairly binding bylaw, right? That any time that they had their own book, it's like, no, you're like an ancillary person.
Yeah, and the same thing, since they came out after Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman were created, they all, by right away, were already honorary members. Especially, except for Wonder Woman, who became secretary.
Yeah.
Which is super. I remember reading that as I was doing my research, reading that and having like a physical, like, ew, no, that's not what you do with Wonder Woman. You don't sit her behind a typewriter
you
and have her take the
minutes. You literally have an Amazonian goddess, like, with you. Like, you could, she can do any, she has a lasso of truth. Like, at the very least, she needs to be out there, like, wrangling the baddies. Like, who else is out there? But I actually have a bone to pick with you, Frank, because I didn't want to like Justice Society of America.
Why not?
Because the Justice League is everything to me. That was my first team book. It was one of the first cartoons I watched. Like, I talk a lot about how Martian Manhunter is my first, like, crush as a person. And then you have, like, Batman and, like, Wonder Woman. And they kind of don't show up in Justice Society that much. They're kind of swoop in and help when they need it. But then you were, like, the leaders of the Justice League. And I thought that was so dope. And I was like, look at these old foggies with their old stories. I don't care about any of this. So when I went to the comic book store, I went to House Secrets. They had their 25-year anniversary sale the other day, which was amazing. Thank you for all my books, guys. I picked up Volume 2 of Justice Society.
Oh, went old school. Very nice.
So this is Justice Society from, which is cool because it doesn't read as old school. It is old school in the style of storytelling, but what's cool about it is this takes place from 1977 to 1979, and it introduces new heroes, but they're with the old guys. So it's like a weird Silver Age look back at the Golden Age, and a way to be like, we know you like these old guys, here's some new people they kind of hang out with. Do you like those guys too? And it takes place on Earth 2, which is fascinating because I love the different universes. And we get our first introduction to Huntress in here, which was amazing. And this is on Earth 2, so instead of the crime boss being her dad, Batman is her dad, and Catwoman is her mother, which makes for the best Huntress maybe ever. Oh my gosh. I don't like old Marvel books that much. Old Spider-Man is pretty cool, but a lot of times there's just too much words in there. I like comic books that are led by art. That's just my style. It's no shade against Marvel. Don't hate me, guys. But I like these old DC books better, and they kind of read like children's stories, which I found kind of strange, but also kind of comforting. Like, you have like maybe 5 or 6 colors on a page because printing is expensive, and they were only 10 cents, so you know they're stripped down to their bare bones. They don't feel the need to get into too many emotions or things. There's a lot of high stakes and a lot of high emotions, but they don't need to explore like how they got into that emotional state. Like, it's just a straight dive in there. Like, it's chaos and people are sad, and we gotta figure this stuff out now. And that kind of energy and that kind of look at superheroes where it's like, we don't need to understand why. They're just superheroes and they have to save the planet. Like, it doesn't matter what's happening. You have a crazy villain who, like, breaks out of prison, who somehow gets magical powers. And once Bruce Wayne dead, who's not Batman in this book, here he's commissioner. He's That's commissioner right. of the police because Selina Kyle, who he marries in On Earth 2, is murdered. She's shot by a bullet. So once again, a bullet just destroys Batman's life. And he's like, crime fighting thing is bad. It's no good. We gotta do it by the book. Gotta do it by the law. So he takes over for Gordon and becomes commissioner. And in here, this guy is like, you put me away, you falsely accused me, you ruined my life. And with all these powers, he comes back, he's like, I'm gonna kill Bruce Wayne. And his only goal is to kill Bruce Wayne. So Batman has to come out of retirement, and one of the saddest moments I've ever read in a comic book where he has to go back and he's like, has this image of Selina like dead in her cat suit, and it's a classic cat suit, so it's like the purple dress, and I was really excited about it. He's looking at his costume, and the narration, which is, if you guys like The Twilight Zone, that's this narration. I read it in the Twilight Zone guy's voice the whole time. And he's like looking at his suit, and he's thinking about his wife, and he has to pick it up, and instead of like putting it on, or like the kind of behind the glass like low shots we're used to seeing where the suit is all powerful and amazing, he's dragging it behind him, guys. He doesn't even want to put it on. He's like marching to his death. This book is so emotional and sad and full of like cool like alternate universe stuff that you'll never get anywhere. I became a fan of Justice Society this week, and I'll take that.
Well, Justice Society came around. They were starting back in 1941. They went until 1951 until sales kind of plateaued for them, and they canceled the book. And what they did is when Flash, they rebooted the Silver Age lineup, starting with Flash. In Flash 123, they introduced Flash of Two Worlds, which we didn't talk about.
I realized when we had wrapped that somehow we'd have managed to not touch on Flash of Two Worlds in our Flash conversation. So what better time to address it, I suppose?
Yeah, and so that opened up the whole multiverse where we find out all of a sudden everybody that we read about in the Golden Age existed on Earth 2, which I still don't understand why they got shafted with Earth 2 since
they were there first. They weren't the ones that were selling the highest at that time.
So you guys are team 2.
That's right. So they became Earth 2, and then you find out all those Justice Society characters are still there and they've aged since that time. That's the nice thing about Earth 2 is that it was all in real time. So, and the stories that you're talking about, Joel, I mean, we've seen them. They've been around since the 40s. They're now in close to their 50s. They have kids of their own and stuff. So
they talk about that too. They're aging, and like Green Lantern has a crisis of identity of like, like, he's given too much of himself to the Lantern, and he's forgotten how to just be Hal, and he's struggling, and he's not working, he's just being a superhero. So Jay comes in and is like, you're gonna come work at my lab with me. Like, you need to have a life. Like, we know your wife died, and it's very tragic, but come back to us, be a person again. And that, like, who knew you got nuanced stories like that amongst fighting, like, these epic kind of silly heroes, or villains, rather. It's amazing.
Well, I thought the nice thing about having the Earth 2 is that I think many fans, when they read comic books, there's that, as we talked about a little bit before, there's that illusion of change, where you know, it's like nobody's really going to change. Spider-Man's always just going to be, you know, in his 20s, Peter Parker. You know, Superman's always just going to be young Clark Kent, maybe married to Lois Lane, maybe not. But this, you finally get to see what those heroes would look like if time had progressed. And you get to see how they are changed and impacted by the passage of time.
We do get about as close as we often do, without it being strictly a one-off story, to getting Act 3. Because comic book storytelling, right, is typically all Act 2. You have your origin story, and that's there. But in most stories you're going to pick up and read, just, you know, random issue of comic books, that happened a long time ago, and you're getting somewhere in the middle of the timeline. You can't do the origin too much. Well, I mean, in Spider-Man movies, they keep doing it. They've done the origin, what, like, a couple times in a small handful of years. Point being, you don't need to labor the origin story again. Maybe you do a block of text over the title, like, you know, bitten by a radioactive spider, Peter Parker is now the Amazing Spider-Man, and that's plenty. And you also don't get Act 3, because then it's done and you have nowhere else to go. So it is interesting, in a world where it is almost exclusively Act 2 storytelling, you do get these characters, these iconic heroes that are in Act 3 of their stories. And that's really cool, because it is so rare that we see that.
And what I liked is the Robin that you see in your stories. He's got a cool costume there, but in the Justice League, when he came back into Justice League, Justice Society crossover, he figured, I gotta take over the mantle of Batman. He did this weird hybrid costume where it's a combination of his Robin and Batman costume, and it's terrible. It's so terrible.
I like that you enjoy the 70s V-neck Robin costume. We were just talking about the silliness of that. But then we also mentioned that it kind of, it's an easy transition from that to his Nightwing costume.
His original,
which is coming in the 80s.
With the deep V and like the frilly.
Mullet, all of it, amazing.
And that was my original crush. Like you said, Martian Manhunter, Dick Grayson was mine.
You like the butt.
I do.
But so Frank, my first big question, again, I defer to you, the guru. When we're talking about, say, the Justice League, everybody has within pretty thin parameter that roster in their head. You know, you've got your Superman, you've got your Batman, your Wonder Woman, your Aquaman, your Flash, your Green Lantern, sometimes your Martian Manhunter and or Cyborg, depending on which version of the story you're reading. Who, in your estimation, is the core JSA roster from whom the rest spring?
Man, for me, it is, of course, Alan Scott, Green Lantern. You've got Jay Garrick, the Flash. You got them. Our Man, Dr. Midnight. I'll put Adam. And I mean, Starman came later, but I feel like he's such a key part of that.
So Star Spangled Kid, that guy from the 20s?
That's Star Spangled Kid.
That guy was hilarious. That's just the character of, like, rich billionaire from the 20s who's somewhat crime fighting, accidentally transported to the future, which is the 70s. And then fighting crime, and in this story he has to, like, face old family members. They're like, our uncle screwed us, so now we're stealing everything back. And he's like, I've left a hole in humanity, I gotta fill it. That kid was hilarious. And he's just in Stars and Stripes. Yeah, it's weird.
And see, in this one, it is a girl. The Star Spangled Kid is a Steffi.
No. Does she have a scepter?
Like, yes.
Okay, so I know that character because I've seen her in Justice League adaptations, but this is the first time I saw this guy, and I thought it was weird and silly.
Yeah, he passed on, in the comic book series, he passed on the title to the original character, and he actually became Skyman later on when they did Infinity Inc. That was kind of the spinoff that they did of the Justice Society America on Earth 2, where it was the sons and daughters and godsons of the Justice Society.
Oh.
Started their own team. And he decided that, hey, I'm not going to be with the Justice Society anymore. I'm going to go with these young kids. And I'm going to renounce Star Spangled Kid. And I'm going to become Skyman.
Yay! Yeah.
And then he was killed by Mr. Bones, who had a cancerous touch. He was a skeleton with a cancerous touch.
That
and he
is a dope-ass villain. Why don't we see more of him? Horrifying.
Like the most chilling power with the most mundane villain name imaginable.
Yeah. That's right. I dropped my earlier work by Todd McFarlane. So if you like that, some of his first work was on Infinity Inc.
Wow. Gotta check that out.
Yeah.
I've never read it.
So, Lex, what did you pick up to read?
Well, okay, so I actually want to let Lucretia go first, because I think the story that I picked works really well as a direct follow-up to the story that Lucretia went with.
Yeah, so basically, I just asked the expert, Frank. I was like, what do I need to read? And Frank suggested a great book that is a JLA-JSA crossover that is Virtue and Vice by David S. Goyer and Jeff Johns. And I have to say, good choice, Frank. I really enjoyed this book. Because, like, it combines a lot of elements I love, and it's incredibly confusing with all the people in it, but it's a crossover. But yeah, one of my favorite things was how they all got sort of infected with the seven deadly sins, basically. Despero sort of gives them these personalities. So Mr. Terrific is pride. Green Lantern is envy. Plastic Man is greed. Batman is anger. That one was spot on. Dr. Faith is slot, and then we've got Lust and Power Girl, again, spot on with that. Like, and then Gluttony goes to Captain Marvel. I was like, this is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, worth noting, by the way, most of these stories that I was looking at to pick one from, this is Captain Marvel before the rebranding. Captain Marvel now known as Shazam.
Shazam,
not to be confused with the character to be played by Brie Larson in the upcoming Marvel Studios film.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, and that was me. I was like, I thought this was Shazam. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, the name change. I looked that up. But I was like, that's what they call him in this one.
That's what I loved about Justice Society when they do an annual team-up with the Justice League. Mm-hmm. And that they went on for... I think pretty much since they got reestablished all the way up until 1985 when Crisis on Infinite Earths hit. So every year you could count on there at least be a two-part, if not three-part crossover between the JSA and the JLA, and then sometimes with the occasional third party like the Legion of Superheroes. You'd have the Seven Soldiers of Victory, like with Star-Spangled Kid in there. All-Star Squadron as well. Other teams are getting mixed in there as well. The New Gods. So many cool storylines. Are you going to resurrect Darkseid? They go to Apocalypse. You get to see Firestorm and Power Girl hanging out. Firestorm making like a nuclear funnel where he just kind of redirects Darkseid's Omega Beam right back at him.
Whoa!
So cool. Yeah. Great early George Perez art. So phenomenal.
Sweet. Yeah, and I really love this story, especially because some of my favorite female characters like Black Canary and Zatanna are sort of, you know, thrust into basically saving everyone. And it really goes back to the Black Canary, Oliver Queen, Green Arrow relationship that I really liked. And the Hawkman makes a line about how Oliver called him a feathered fascist. Yeah. That's the Oliver Queen I love.
And yes.
Which was more on this show because I was like, yes, this is so good. And then, you know, it starts out when they're trying to have Thanksgiving. And which is funny because Lex will talk about
this. Specifically why I wanted Lucretia to go first.
But yeah, it's just really an interesting story about, so there are the seven deadly sins, and it's, you know, again, our, you know, our powers are thrust in here. And it basically bookends with Sentinel and Superman out in space. And I really like that. And then it, you know, ends with that as well, because it's this sort of like, you know, Earth is small. Like, what do we do with this? Are we too powerful? Because, you know, obviously they were affected by Despero, who I still think of Kari Elwes from Psych, by the way, when I hear that name. But But yeah, it was just such a cool story. I was like, you know, I never even heard of this till Frank pointed it out. I was like, yeah, like, because I love, like, Seven Deadly Sins stuff anyway, and especially when you're tacking it on, like, greed to Plastic Man, who I still think Walton Goggins needs to play, by the way. Even more so in this book, because it's a pretty, like, almost dirty at times with some of his comments. I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah. And it's got beautiful art by Charles Pacheco and Jesus Marino. Just phenomenal. So that ties in directly with what you're talking about.
So Lucretia, you just mentioned in this JSA-JLA crossover that there was an attempt made to have a joint Thanksgiving dinner. So there was a storyline that took place in about 2003, 2004 when Jeff Johns was writing JSA. And it's a storyline that was collected into a volume called Princes of Darkness. And in that storyline, you've got Mordru, Eclipso, and Obsidian. And they band together to wipe out the JSA and dominate mankind, you know, like they are wont to do. Midway through this storyline, JSA number 54, an issue titled Virtue, Vice, and Pumpkin Pie by Jeff Johns.
Love these titles.
By Jeff Johns and Don Kramer, they managed to do exactly that. The world is at risk, but there's always time for a little family get-together. The JSA and the JLA assemble under one roof to have Thanksgiving dinner, and the issue opens with a conversation between Batman and Mr. Terrific, where Batman is basically, as Batman does, he's being very grumbly, and he's going, "We're all in one place. Pretty bad idea. This is pretty bad. All they gotta do is just drop a bomb and suddenly all the superheroes are gone. This is bad plan." And Mr. Terrific's like, Batman, it's Thanksgiving. Stop Batmaning so hard for one day and let's just have a festive meal, right?
They basically have the same scene in this book.
Yeah, so you get, before things go awry, you get these wonderful moments of the JSA members and the JLA members interacting with each other in a way that feels so, if you've ever been to a slightly uncomfortable family holiday,
that's all of mine.
It's so recognizable. For example, you've got Wildcat getting drunk and picking a fight with Wonder Woman.
Yes!
Basically,
do
being
they
like,
throw down? Do they throw punches?
Well, here's what happens. So Wonder Woman basically just stares him down, gives him a look like, I don't need this. You know what I mean? And he's doing it. He's going like full men's rights activist. Mm-hmm. He's going like, you're from, yeah, Amazon, you're from an island of man-haters. Mm-hmm. And he's being
he's
so belligerent.
Sexist.
Power Girl just throws him out a window.
Yes!
And they're startled, but it's like, he'll land on his feet. He'll be fine.
And he has a arm wrestling match with Green Lantern in this one, and he calls him Green Latrine. I love that. Like, yeah, he just loves to fight, apparently.
You've got Bart Allen, who we touched upon last week, and Jakeem Thunder being pals and getting in trouble for swearing. Jay Garrick chastises them like the dad. You've got Black Canary and Dr. Midnight having a conversation about why their relationship never worked out. You've got Stargirl getting offended because she's being sat at the kids' table. And you've got this great exchange with as he was then called, Captain Marvel, who is, in fact, Billy Batson with magic that makes him a full-grown person. They have this quiet conversation where it's like, shouldn't you also be at the kids' table? And he's like, shh, don't tell him. So they all sit down to have Thanksgiving dinner, and of course it was a bad idea to gather all in one place. Kulak and the Warlock of Ease show up, flip the dinner table with Thanksgiving dinner on it. Thanksgiving is all over the walls.
Clark is not going to like that.
Well, so that's about as far as we get before Kulak and the Warlock of Ease look around the room, realize they are surrounded by the assembled Justice Society of America, Justice League of America, and they go, oh, we made a huge mistake.
In Will Arnett's voice.
Yeah. The issue ends with Batman and Mr. Terrific going downstairs at the headquarters to pick up about $200 worth of pizza that they had delivered for everybody, and Batman gets to say, I told you so.
That's a Quartermain Thanksgiving.
That's right. This is amazing.
As soon as I discovered this story existed, I said, not only do I need to absorb it with my eyeballs into my being, I need the rest of the world to know of it as well.
Amazing.
An excellent choice. Mm. The one thing I like, as we were talking about, and is even as soon as your story is right there, the Justice Society, when they came back, it became more about, like, what's their point of view? You've got the Justice League. What do you need the Justice Society for? And it became about legacy for them. You get to see the passage of time, but you also get to see them wanting to make sure that they set up the future with their wisdom from the past. So you see that with Power Girl, yeah. Huntress, Star Spangled Kid, them kind of molding and trying to instill those virtues in the heroes for tomorrow.
But what's really cool about it, I think anyways, in reading this, like, the Golden Age is what, like, late 20s to mid 50s?
Mid 30s to, maybe like the mid 50s.
Okay, so if this 77, this is 20 years later at the earliest, it's cool to see, like, how these heroes are viewed. Like, how these, you know, like, Jay and GL are held in such high esteem. Like, they're almost like Batman in here, which is so weird for me, because they're always, you know, second or thirdary characters if you're looking at Justice League stuff. Like, even if they're on the original team, you know, depending on which version of the Justice League you're looking at, they're always kind of supporting characters. Whereas here, like, they're clearly the leaders. Like, you defer to Green Lantern. The Flash and Green Lantern have all these really great kind of conversations about back in the day and what it was like. And then to see them kind of pass it on and bring new heroes in, I kind of wondered if at that moment it was bridging a gap in comics readers. You know what I mean? If it was taking people who were like, oh, yeah, I kind of used to read comics as a kid, now I see these same characters, and then you have, you know, people looking to just get in and get started. And I like this idea of older people and young people coming together to read a comic book. And you get that sense throughout these pages. You also get really cool characters that I've never heard of, like, villains-wise. Thorn is dope. Like, she's like a more aggressive Poison Ivy. Whereas Ivy's all like, oh, my plants. Thorn is like, I will straight up kill you with my thorns. Like, I will just, she like throws like daggers shaped like Thorn. Her costume is even kind of like Poison Ivy's. But she can like spin wind really fast. It sounds so silly, but in reading the comic, like, it's a lot of fun to watch her just destroy things and be giddy about it, which I think is rare that we get a hero. Like, we have the Joker who's giddy, but he's, like, morbidly giddy, where she's just like, and everything dies. Great. Moving on. It's just, oh, man. I had so much fun reading this comic.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned Jay Garrick. One of the best parts of Virtue and Vice is when Plastic Man takes Jay's hat. It's like, ooh, I can get a lot of money with this on eBay. And that's like, you're like, yeah, this is a 21st century one, yeah.
I do, but like you said, like you're talking about, Joelle, that they defer to characters like Jay Garrick and Alan Scott as, like, patriarchal, almost like dad figures.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting. Like, in Virtue Vice and Pumpkin Pie, it is Jay Garrick who's chastising the young ones for swearing, for example. And it's very telling that in a room that also includes, say, Batman and Superman, it is Jay Garrick Flash who sits at the head of the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is such a deference, especially in this kind of iteration of the JLA and the JSA, where now they can bind them on the same Earth after Crisis of Infinite Earths, that those Silver Age heroes look upon those Golden Age heroes with so much more respect, and they defer to them. They started it, so, you know, we bow to them. They did it first. They did it the best. So we see that even in the modern-day stuff with Geoff Johns, David Goyer, and James Robinson, when they took over and they rebooted the JSA back in the 2000s, they also, that sense of legacy came in, because that's when you got the new Mr. Terrific introduced inside there. You've got Sandman's, his protege Sandy ended up taking on the mantle of Sandman as well.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Although his costume, first off, where he's wearing a baseball cap and, like, the sweater.
Oh, no.
Not a good fashion choice.
No. Not good. Sandman-y looks like at all. And this is the original Sandman costume. So cool. It's kind of like a mariner scuba diving kind of, like, weird mystic thing going on. Yeah, that's kind of just a sweatshirt and a baseball cap.
Yeah,
really.
And a funky mask. So, yeah, they had funky, like, Sandman-esque mask on there, but it was just, like, this puffy sweater.
Baseball cap. Like, sleepy? I don't know. Okay.
And see, these are, like, early versions of, like, DC Dark, which is one of the things that I love so much. So, yeah, you're seeing, like, Sandman, Dr. Fate, Zatanna, like, coming in, and I'm like, oh, so this was, like, the birth of that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, because I feel like Mr. Terrific, and we'll see more of that if you're Arrow fans, going to be seeing that later this season.
Yes.
As he kind of makes his mantle finally.
Yeah.
Yes. Assuming that, but I love this interpretation of Mr. Terrific. I mean, he was a character that was originally introduced in the Justice Society and then killed in a JLA-JSA crossover by the Spirit King, somebody who they've always vowed to always catch and never did. And I feel like that was like a dangling thread that, you know, Jay Garrick was possessed by the Spirit King and killed Mr. Terrific. And it's like, we're going to get him. And that never happened. They just kept saying, we're going to get him. We're going to get him. And nobody ever got him.
But they did just bring... But they brought Mr. Terrific back eventually. Of course, because it's comics. Like, for example, I was reading about what the universe... What was happening in the DCU around the time of the story that I picked, Virtue, Vice, and Pumpkin Pie. Wally West Flash is specifically absent from this Thanksgiving dinner because apparently, in-universe, he was temporarily dead at the time.
So, love it.
Comics.
Love it.
That's right. Yeah. Now, as much as I love the Justice Society, and these guys will attest, I'm so excited about the Justice Society. I was so excited about this episode. DC Comics, at certain times in their publishing history, were not that excited about the Justice Society. They were often, I mean, in 1951, the sales were low, so they kind of did away with them until they kind of revitalized the characters in their Silver Age iterations. When they crossed them over, a little bit of excitement about those old characters, so they kind of came back, did the series that you were reading, Joelle. And then when Crisis on Infinite Earths hit, and they combined the Earths, and all of a sudden you have the Justice Society back in the 40s, and then you have the modern-day Justice League, you wonder, like, well, what's the use of the Justice Society now if they're all on the same Earth? So they did away with them for a while. And, in fact, they did a story, The Last Days of the Justice Society, where they ended up taking over the bodies of Asgardian gods and then reliving again and again in some kind of vicious time loop, Ragnarok.
Oh,
and so
God.
they had to stay there to prevent Ragnarok from happening. And they were stuck in this limbo, kind of taken out of DC continuity then.
Wow.
You're breaking my brain.
Yeah, they actually mention Ragnarok in Virtue and Vice, which is interesting. I was like, I thought that was the other universe.
To be fair, Marvel doesn't own Norse mythology.
Yeah.
They just own, like, Chris Hemsworth doing Norse mythology.
Yeah, but it's like, it's always like when you read, like, DC's version of it, you're like, man, that's not as cool. Mm.
I see the implication that you're making, Frank.
Yeah.
Fighting words.
And then in the early 90s, they brought them back. They got them out of that Ragnarok loop. They were able to bring them back to a modern day continuity there. And they had this great 10-issue run in the 90s by Len Straczynski and Mike Parobek, who did the artwork. work. And I mean, he has a very much like a Bruce Timm kind of style of art. So it was supposed to be 12 issues, only went 10, and Mike Carlin, the editor, then canceled it because he felt that DC Comics isn't about old superheroes. Nobody wants to read about old superheroes, so I'm canceling this book.
This is before the nostalgia craze, I presume. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's pretty much just solidly running off of that now.
Yeah. So for you guys, do you need to read about heroes that are contemporaries of yours? Are you fine with reading about heroes that are older?
I mean, I wish DC would honestly cut half their slate and go back to releasing like maybe 10 comics a month. Like the amount of heroes that they have. And just, I feel like not always story isn't always first. And it's so much about crossover. And I understand, like, you're a publishing house, you need to stay, keep your doors open. Comic book sales are on the increase, and yet, you know, still not the best. So I understand, but it's just so bogged down and heavy. But as opposed, like, if the story's good, I would read anything. Like, they just rebooted Dr. Fate in the DCU line, and it's one of my favorite books. They've recast Dr. Fate. The mask is in a museum, and an Egyptian-American kid finds it and puts the mask on and doesn't want anything to do with his, like, heritage. Doesn't really, like, you know, he's Muslim, but it's not, you know, a heavy practice for him. He kind of does it because of what his family is into. But the book is relevant, and it's amazing, and Dr. Fate will be cool for ever and always, so I see no reason why. Like, we were just talking about Gail Simone and Secret Six, and she's rebooted. Oh crap, Wildcat in there, and he's now like a bisexual guy who will flirt with anything, have sex with things. So the things that made Wildcat sexist, which are kind of a turn off, because even in here he's like, women should stay in the kitchen. And I'm like, Wildcat, come on. Like, he's a grumpy grandpa in here, so it kind of works. But she was able to reboot that into a storyline that instead of being derogatory, he's just horny all the time. And it works. He's pretty much the same character, just without the hate.
Yeah, and it's a shame with Dr. Fate that they had to cancel Constantine, because in the pilot of that, he picks up the Dr. Fate mask. So
sure does.
There could have easily been a cool spinoff. And like you say, you know, with this new reboot being an Egyptian-American who's Muslim, they could have had a way more diverse comic universe if NBC didn't suck.
Oh, dear.
Well, fighting words.
Right?
Dr. Fate is always an interesting character, because when they did, Roy Thomas, who did a lot of Justice Society stories, went and started the All-Star Squadron, which is basically almost like the Invaders for Marvel. We kind of go back in time and reinserting like World War II era stories back into their continuity. So these are stories that are supposed to take place around the same time as the original Justice Society stories. But FDR ends up kind of after, right just before Pearl Harbor, says, all right, I need to get a collection of every superhero that's ever possible. They should all be part of a team, and that'll be the All-Star Squadron. And Dr. Fate was one of the members there, but because he was so worried about the helmet with that Naboo possessing him and kind of losing control, he did a version of the helmet where it was just a half helmet. So it was just up to his nose, and then it would give him like all the kind of like super strength and ability to fly, but without all like a lot of the magical resources. Mm. So he became just essentially just like Superman, but you know, which is like a half helmet.
So if the half helmet reduces his abilities, what happens if he makes a really big helmet that like covers his whole torso?
That's like a cowl helmet.
Like, does that like not, is he God?
That's
then?
Pretty awesome.
Joelle, I wanted to agree 100% with the fact that for me, to answer to your previous question, Frank, it is so about the story. And what I love about some of these older iterations of these characters, whether it's your Jay Garrick Flash, your Alan Scott Green Lantern, etc., there is a lightness of tone and an optimism that I think DC is hopefully starting to turn back in that direction. But and as much as I love DC, and as much as I really do enjoy a lot of what New 52 gave us, controversial though it may be, DC has at various points in their history had a tendency to veer really hard into everyone's really mad all the time. Being a hero's rough. I don't want to help people. Why am I doing this? I miss my parents. And that's fine. You know what I mean? But I can only read that for so long before I feel like I need to tap out for a little bit. You know what I mean? Whereas you pick up Jay Garrick Flash, and I'm not saying it's drama free, certainly, but I know I'm usually going to be reading a story about a guy who's doing good because that's the good thing to do, and that's a superhero to me.
Well, I feel like the challenge with the Justice Society is their origins, World War II. All those, but for the most part, almost all those characters came out of that time period. And so as they progress through DC's history, they're still stuck back in that original source period. So it's one thing in the 50s, it's okay. But also in the 70s, 80s, 90s, modern day, thinking like, well, these guys were also in World War II. So they always have to come up with reasons like, how are these people still active superheroes, you know, when they're coming on to like 80 years since World War II happened?
Well, I know Marvel's way around that in-universe, right, is that everything, no matter what year you're picking up this book in, everything has taken place in what, it's like the last... Like
7 years.
Seven to ten, give or take. So now, actually, like, if you think about it, everything happening in Marvel Comics now is meant to be like post-9/11. The whole universe is post-9/11 now, which is a little weird. But I don't know, does DC, to your knowledge, have a version of that? Or is it just, timeline's too complicated, let's do another crisis?
They did something where they went up against a character called Ian Karkul, who, when he was defeated, he ended up blasting the Justice Society members that were fighting him with this kind of coronal radiation, which basically just prolonged their, like, made them, give them youth and vigor and delayed their aging process. So that's why they could still be in their 50s and 60s and still be as sprightly as they seem to be in their 30s and maybe 40s.
Amazing.
Yeah, so for you, does, like, as you're reading all this, do you get held up in thinking like, oh man, these guys came back from World War II?
Not even a little bit. Not even, like, I'm so far removed from that, and I don't know if it's just from having read comics for so long or having, I mean, I think maybe especially for fans now, like, we've seen the universe rebooted like what, 3 times in the last 10 years or something like that. So it doesn't, like, I don't need permanent time space. Like, it doesn't matter to me, like, where these guys are or where they're from. What matters to me is what happens in between the pages of the book. And I kind of find it weird that it would hang anybody up at this point. Like, you've seen so many alternate universes and things, like, can you just let the characters be? Do they need to be grounded in a specific time?
Yeah, and when they all get together, it's certainly fun to watch hero teams use their powers in conjunction with each other, combine their abilities in different interesting ways. But for me, and it sounds like, you know, the stories that we all gravitated towards are first and foremost hangout stories. You know what I mean? Like, you just get to spend time with these people in a room with each other having conversations. And so if their World War II origin is pertinent and it creates an interesting interaction, great. And if not, I'm not even really actively thinking about it.
I think you could easily just push up Wars. And now they're from Vietnam. And now they're from Desert Storm. Like, just keep going. Yeah. Just a little bit more.
Well, like, and especially with Desert Storm. Sorry to cut you off there, Frank. Is, like, you have Desert Storm, and then you had Operation Iraqi Freedom. Like, you could easily compare the JSA with one, and then the JLA with one.
Lucretia over here being a writer.
Yeah. It's like, stories. Pull that up, what? Because there's so many similarities to that. Yeah. And that would be a good story, DC.
Now, when DC did their whole new 52, one of the things they did is they spun off, they did an Earth 2 story where they kind of rebooted the Justice League concept. They had James Robinson do it, and he basically re-envisioned all the heroes. It wasn't like, you weren't seeing the original, you were seeing the names and characters in name only. You're seeing Alan Scott, you're seeing Jay Garrick, seeing all these ones, but they were kind of reinterpreted. So Green Lantern became essentially like an Earth elemental, almost like that Earth Swamp Thing.
Oh.
In sorts, yes.
Okay.
The Flash, instead of getting his powers from hard water, was given the speed of Mercury. The dying god transferred his power onto...
Oh,
yes,
that's so cool.
It makes more sense than the hard water, actually.
Hard water doesn't give you fast speed?
What? I've got some hard water in my car, Lex. After this, I thought we were going to go and just...
After the show, me and Frank going to go do some hard water.
Y'all in? Y'all in? In front of a car and see if that works.
But I'm ching. Yeah. I really also like the villains from this time, because a dark villain can be wonderful. It can be really great. But to have these kind of, how do you want to call them or not? Because they have, like, okay, for example, Huntress is a villain in here. You have Huntress, Batman's daughter, Helena Wayne, but then you also have Huntress, the villain. Her goal in life is just to collect superheroes as trophies. And she's not going to kill them. She just wants to put them in glass. So she has them all over. And it's wonderful. Because that to me is completely crazy psycho. And it makes fighting them so much more fun. Because, like, nobody wants to be in glass for the rest of your life. Like, the idea of being a display thing comes into play. The 200's his battle for the name, essentially. So, like, just having, like, a raw smackdown over name feel kind of very wrestlery in theory. And I like that idea because, you know, wrestling is like opera with fights and superheroes. Yeah. Operas with fights. Like, they should feel Wesley. They should have, like, these weird alter egos and things. It's just, I feel like I've never read real comics until I read this. Like, all comics I've read are more like novels with pictures.
Sure.
If that makes sense, where this is so, like, this is superheroes.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
End of story. And that's kind of a fascinating way to go to see where we've evolved. What did people want? Like, it's clear to me these... They kind of, like we said earlier, they skip a little bit over emotions to see like why people would put that in there, because it does become interesting. You become so much more attached to the characters and you relay your iterations of like, and this is why I'm sad. But in here, it just doesn't matter. And it still works. I like seeing the evolution of comics through that formatting.
That's one of the most fascinating things about going back and reading. No matter, you go all the way back to like first Action Comics issues. Mm. You read it, and there's some stuff in there that, oh boy, it's very clear why we abandoned some of these ideas. But it's fascinating to go back reading older stories to see what has always consistently worked.
Mm-hmm. The guy they went up against, the Sportsmaster.
Yes! And this is old Sportsmaster. So new Sportsmaster, for those of you who like are into the tunes and stuff, it's pretty dope. He's kind of like a Jason thing. He's got like the hockey mask, and he wears a sort of a Letterman jacket without any letters on it. Like, you know, kind of the puffy jackets or whatever. And it's cool. He's not really into sports so much. Here, he's just more like an umpire. He's got baseballs that are also bombs and bats that will like explode on contact. Most of his stuff is just sports memorabilia that will explode. And that's pretty awesome.
If I were a supervillain, I'm starting to think that I would be that guy.
That would be you. Start sending out your headshot and resume so that when they port that character onto the CW, you are first in line to audition.
Exactly.
But reading this iteration of Sportsmaster, I was like, okay, this is kind of just like a goofy villain. And I never really felt like the coolness potential. But when you watch Young Justice and you see him go up against Deathstroke, you're like, oh, geez, this guy is really awesome.
He's amazing.
I feel like in the DC universe, if you want to make the entirety of your readership take any character seriously, immediately just have them go toe-to-toe with Deathstroke and not die.
Yeah, that's right. That's
That is very true. Deathstroke is amazing.
Now, we haven't talked about the story that I was going to pick, and I've read many things, but the one thing I was like, I went back, like, I haven't read this in a long time, I should read it again. It was America versus the Justice Society of America.
Okay.
Oh my God.
And you find out that Batman, before he died, had written this diary about the true story of the Justice Society of America, and basically outing them as Nazis. They were taken over by Adolf Hitler and the Spear of Destiny, became Nazi agents there, and were working to destroy America. And then basically accused them all of treason, then turned this over to a scientist, and then he went off to die.
And we need a History Channel documentary on this, narrated by Ben Affleck as Batman.
We don't know for sure what Affleck's Batman movie's about. Maybe it's this.
Yeah, this is a great story.
And he's just wrangling them up to bring them to justice. He's like, join my team. It'll be great. Prosecution.
The diary gets delivered to Clark Kent, who's, of course, editor of the Daily Star at that time.
Oh, wow.
So he's got to go over it. And I mean, torn because he's Superman, but he's also a reporter. So he's got to be able to, you know, he's got to report these facts. This is a story that's been given to him. So everything gets vetted and then released. And then the government wants to call him in front for a hearing. And the concept right there, what I explained to you, sounds really fun. But then, man, it's like four issues of them standing around a courtroom for the longest time. Well, they're just like retelling their origin and going through all these stories. And it's like, man, if you want to read four issues of Starman and Hawkman and Green Lantern, everybody just standing in a courtroom doing testimony, man, this is the book for you. It was,
Oliver Stone should direct that.
Yes.
Oh, my God. He would make it amazing.
As much as I love those characters, this was not their finest series. I was like, oh boy. And every issue is like double length. And so it just like, as I'm reading it, it's like, man, I'm just at issue two. Holy cow. So what is happening?
Frank, early 80s?
Right after the crisis. So between 87.
So a double issue, we're down to like 22 pages now.
It was back 48, then they were 48 pages an
Jesus.
Issue.
Jesus.
Of just legal dissertation.
Yeah. And just like them getting into minute details of like, you know, it was like Roy Thomas just like picking off all the boxes. Like, I'm going to make sure like every issue of the Justice Society from the original series and every story I wrote and every story Paul Levitz wrote, they all kind of line up together. And like, oh boy, all right.
That sounds like an encyclopedia nerd's dream, though.
It is.
Like, they brought it all together and now it makes sense. All the details are there and put together. That's a really crazy story. And I kind of want someone to dramatize
I know Law and Order, JSA.
Right? Exactly.
Dick Wolf, get on that. I know you need some more. You've only got one left.
I'm about it.
Now, since DC did the big rebirth, there's been teases in the first rebirth issue that they did, like teases that the Justice Society is going to be coming back. Nothing like concrete been announced, always kind of hinted, along with allusions to the Legion of Superheroes, as well as a few other characters, too. But I'm hoping, do you now seeing these characters here, do you miss having them as a relevant part of the current DC universe? Do you want them to come back, or are you like, the time has come and gone for the Justice Society?
I think the Justice Society is a lot like the Marvel Netflix shows, in that the movies are for heroes in the sky, and the shows are for heroes on the streets. And I feel like Justice Society can very easily fill that heroes on the street kind of role. Like, they're more personable, they're more about helping the individual little guy. And as I said, I think there's always a place. There's any hero that's ever been created. And the cool thing about superheroes is that they're like an American patchwork. Like, you so many generations and different ideologies coming together to retell over and over again these stories. So I think the idea that they're just useless now would be to ignore the history that made these comics great.
Well, and especially right now with DC TV on the CW, the Justice Society of America are a part of Legends of Tomorrow in an iteration. And then on The Flash, spoiler alert, guys, if you didn't watch last night's episode, is Jesse Quick, who was part of the JSA at one point. It, you know, has been revealed in the show.
And of course, Jay Garrick being a significant supporting player on the show as well. I mean, I agree. I think the potential for these characters has always been and continues to be limitless. It is just a question of how effectively they are utilized. And we'll see. Rebirth now, it seems like every criticism that was made, that was leveled at the New 52 as a creative enterprise, it seems like DC has heard, and they're like, okay, well, let's be a little bit happier, and then everything you guys miss, it's all back on the table at once, and also the Watchmen are there. So we'll see, and I'm excited, frankly, because if it is all about, if it's not going to be so intensely continuity driven, it's going to be about story and character first, and they're going to afford different writers the opportunity to come in, play in the sandbox for a little bit, tell their stories, and maybe then peace out. There are so many different places you could take these characters. It's just a question of, do they have the faith in their readership and in the material to really push those stories?
I think it's going to depend so much on if they find the right writer for that. Because when Jeff Johns, David Goyer, and James Robinson, they did it. James Robinson left, then it became just David Goyer and Jeff Johns. And then eventually David Goyer left, then it was just Jeff Johns. And all those stories, I really enjoyed. Jeff Johns did a main chunk of two different versions of that. And then he ended up leaving the series. Bill Willingham from Fables took over for a little bit. Then Matt Sturgis took over after that. And then Mark Guggenheim kind of rounded out the end of the JSA. And man, it was like diminishing returns as it went on. Yeah, and the Mark Guggenheim stuff, as much as I've enjoyed other stuff he's written, the JSA was just, man, I mean, he broke Green Lantern's back and he gave him this weird different costume where he was literally, the main part of his costume was like the lantern that he has. It was so weird because it had to be like a hard shell to protect his broken back. It was so
I adore that thought, though. I really like, look, everything doesn't have to be good to me. Sometimes what I need is someone just trying new things, and I really like the idea of, like, he's broken but he refuses to give up to fight, so he'll make a lantern out of his life as a back brace and he'll still just charge into battle. Like, how foolish and ridiculous on so many levels, but good try, man. Good way to go out there and try some new stuff.
I feel exactly the same way, where it's like, look, if the story is not necessarily up to a high literary bar, then just swing that bat as hard as you can.
Right? Especially in something like Justice Society, when you do have all of these, like, kind of when now it feels kind of quirky and ridiculous, I feel like if you're going to try to redo it and pay homage to the original, like, that's a fun way to try to be like, it's ridiculous, but, you know, he might try it. That's fun. I want to read all of these comics now.
Jay Garrick became mayor of a city, Monument City. He was mayor for a while. Yeah, so if you want to see Jay Garrick dealing with, you know, business politicians and something like that, great. It's great stuff. A lot of fun stuff in that run.
It's like, we've got a very serious zoning dispute, Jay. I can run really fast around the building a few times. That probably looks pretty impressive.
You know, I have to say this, too. I feel like we have this conversation about pacing a lot. Whereas I like the current pacing of a lot of comic books, where it's very, very, very slow. You know, you're really getting into people's emotions. You're getting into, like, several layers of backstory. Like, all characters are onions. But after reading this and knowing how much you love Justice Society, I'm like, oh, I get it. You're like, we need to get to the point. We need to tell a full story in a comic, in a single issue. I feel like I understand you more by reading this comic.
Thank you. Yeah. Because there are, if people ask you, who's Flash? Who's Green Lantern? I mean, my first choice is, I'll say Hal Jordan. I'll say Barry Allen. But my favorite versions of those characters are Alan Scott, Jay Garrick, people like that. Those are the ones that there's just something about, when you see Jay Garrick in his bowl hat showing up, you see Alan Scott, what an awesome costume. I mean, the purple cape, the red shirt, the big
so
puffy sleeves.
Silly to me. I try to get over it, but he looks like the guys that drive carriages. And I'm always like, what are you doing here? So weird.
So as we're winding up here, why don't we just go down the line and say, what do you like about the JSA, and why do you think people should take the time to read these cast of characters?
Okay, look, if you like the Justice League as much as I do, you definitely want to pick up Justice Society of America. Here's why. These are their grandparents, and you love your grandparents, right? They are full of great stories. They don't always make sense, but they are fun, good-hearted people. Hopefully you have good grandparents. The Justice Society of America is exactly that. They are just slightly older versions of the people you love, but they also inspired and are literally the nexus, like the beginning pinnacle point of what comics were going to become. If you don't know your comics books history, and that's something you want to learn, they're going to catch you up. And also, you get the very cool, like, sidebar of alternate universes, which, again, if you're like me, I'm, like, really into fan fiction. I love alternate universes. I like seeing what people will do when put in, like, situations they would never normally have to face in their story structure. You get a lot of that here. And plus, it's just really, like, it's warm, fuzzy teen feelings. It's got everything you want in a comic book. It's precious.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% with all of that. And I will add, if you want to pick up a comic book and you love the DCU, and maybe Joker having his face cut off and then wearing it to mess with people is not really your speed.
Who are you? I'm disappointed in you. That's amazing.
That's a good story.
But if that level of scuzziness and darkness and angst in your superhero stories isn't necessarily your bag, this is an amazing way. It's like a very back to basics. Heroism is an optimistic thing to aspire to, and it's great. And that, to me, is why I fell in love with superhero stories in the first place. And it is all so well represented in these stories with these characters.
And for me, it's just a matter of, you know, this is the zeitgeist right now. The Justice Society of America is featured all over the CW right now. So why don't, instead of asking your friend who knows all about comics, instead of annoying them, why don't you go read the comics, guys? Then you'll learn all about it. Or just do Wikipedia, whatever you want.
There's a reason why on the series season one finale of The Flash, when Jay Garrick's helmet flies out of that portal, I stood up out of my chair and started making noises. If you want that level of joy in your life, pick up a Justice Society of America story, folks.
Volume 2, which is all of the Silver Age, is only $18 in an actual physical copy, and I'm sure much cheaper if you went to the Comixology or Amazon or eBay or your choice of places. It's not expensive to get into this and get a full story, like 3 years worth of comics. $18. I mean, how are you going to beat that?
You can't beat that. I mean, as I said before, I mean, they are the history of the DC Universe right there. They are such great aspirational characters. This panel has already said so many great things. I'll just leave you with a couple great reading choices. If you want to see, DC put out a series of trade paperbacks, I think there are 5 of them, Crisis on Multiple Earths. You can read all of the JSA, JLA crossovers there in chronological order. 5 trades. They're fantastic. Well worth your time. Such a fun collection of great scientific, goofy tropes and villains and time travel and shenanigans. It's amazing to read. And then Jeff Johns, David Goyer, and James Robinson, original run of JSA, all the way from, it's volume 1 that they did back early 2000s, from 1 up to 76. All great issues to read there as well. So guys, check that out. The JSA is where it's at, everybody. Get on board! Or get off the bus. Yes. That's right, sure. That's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Book Exchange. But we'll be back next week doing a deep dive of everybody's favorite Emerald Archer. That's right.
Yay!
Green Arrow, everybody!
Yay!
That's
so
right.
Excited.
In the meantime, folks, like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hop in the chat. Everybody, we'd love to be able to hear what your comments are about comics or just anything in general. Just anything. Just likes to, you know, like, know what you're doing.
I told you guys, I don't have food coming in and out of my system anymore. It's all likes.
Talk about how you like your steaks prepared. And just getting really hungry and salivating.
Yeah, it's that's my sustenance, you guys. I need it.
There you go. And in the meantime, if you want to talk comics with us, Joel, where can they find you?
Hey guys, I'm Joel Monique. You can find me everywhere on the internet at Joel Monique, and every week on blackgirlnerds.com. Head back here Tuesday to our Social Network After Buzz. I'll be hosting Atlanta, and Sundays where I do Westworld. And if you're into superheroes, you need to be watching Westworld. It's amazing.
Westworld is awesome.
So good. You watched it finally.
Good. It's so good. She's not kidding or exaggerating at all. It's amazing. So I am Lex Michael, all over social media at TheLexMichael, and I'm also all over our sister network, AfterBuzz TV. I do the Supergirl panel. I do the Arrow panel. And, of course, if you want to continue to talk with us about the Justice Society, Legends of Tomorrow, Thursday nights, every week for the rest of the season, we will see you guys there.
And since I'm your Oracle, Lucretia Lyon, you guys can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one, and all over AfterBuzz TV, whether it's Legends of Tomorrow, sometimes Flash, sometimes Arrow, Lucifer, or anything DC, I've probably been on there.
There's a special episode of Gotham with just me and Lucretia being crazy late at night. It's so much fun.
And I'm Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie. Also on Legends Tomorrow on AfterBuzz as well. Tomorrow night for our show, we're going to have Sarah Nicole Jones, the writer of Season 2, Episode 2, where the JSA kind of gets really featured and showcased in there. So going to have a chance to pick her brain, find out everything she did and putting that episode together. So until then, folks, we'll see you next week as we break down Green Arrow here on the Comic Book Exchange.
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO, join the circle.